Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can come together to enjoy each other and to listen to discussions and lectures and worship services. And we're also thankful for the writers of the Old Testament that gave us these wonderful stories to read, and the prophets to study, and the writers of the New Testament who wrote down the words of Jesus and his teachings. And we're so thankful for all of this so that we can read it and find inspiration from it. And we give these thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
This is Leah, a love story. And Leah is a love story. As you remember, Leah was the first wife of Jacob. Jacob and Leah and Rachel's father had agreed to that Jacob would work 7 years for Rachel. He hadn't brought enough money to pay a bride price, which was the custom, so he worked out the amount for the bride price, and he was to work 7 years for Rachel. And the night of the wedding, the father substituted Leah because she was older and she should be married first. So here we have a story, don't we? A dramatic story right from our Bible. Many people ask me, is this a book of fiction? The story is not fiction. The story of Leah and her great desire that her husband will love her is not fiction. It's all there in Genesis 29, 30, and 31. Especially in 29, her great desire that her husband will love her. So it is a love story. I have added, of course, how did she feel when her father told her that she was to be substituted for her sister on the wedding night? And I've added dialogue, and I've added description of the land and the trees and shrubs and things like that. So those I've added, and I've added some things that I thought would, some imagination. But the basic story is certainly not fiction. And many people have asked me, why did I choose to, chairs up here, I'd love to have you come and sit closer. I feel like the pastor with the empty pews in the front. So thanks for coming. We started a couple minutes early because we were all sitting here quiet. Many persons have asked, why did you decide to write about Leah? And I thought, well, the reason, one of the main reasons was that she's been so neglected, not only by her husband, but by historians. Much has been written about Rachel and Jacob and their great love story, which is a lovely story, yes. And much has been written about Esther and Ruth and Naomi. But no one, as far as I could find in history, had ever written Leah's story. So this is Leah's story, and it is a love story. If you have any questions as I go along, just be free to ask them, because if something comes to your mind, or if I say something that isn't clear to you, then please be feel free to ask. And so I'm going to read just little sections here and there, and we'll consider it a Bible study in a way. With a little imagination added. Now, Jacob has arrived in Haran. This is where his grandfather came from, his grandfather Abraham. And he went up to Haran because, if you recall, he deceived his twin brother Esau and his father and got the blessing and the birthright. So his brother Esau Here's a seat right here. His brother Esau threatened to kill him, and then his mother Rebekah said, you better take off, Jacob, and while you're up there, find a wife for yourself from among your kinsmen, because she was kind of unhappy with Esau. He'd taken two wives, and they were both Hittites, and she had a lot of trouble with that son's wives. So she wanted Jacob to marry someone who was related to him, probably one of his cousins, which he did, of course. So he has arrived up there, and the two girls are pretty excited. Now, in those days, the girls married very young, so these are two teenage girls, as you can tell. Rachel came into the courtyard. Well, Jacob arrives at the well, as you remember, and waters the flock for Rachel. She's a shepherdess, and he waters the flock, and she runs home to tell her father that this cousin has come from Canaan. And so she's told her father. And then she comes out of her father's room. Rachel came into the courtyard from the house, her dark hair swinging loosely down her back. She danced over to Leah. Father has gone to meet him. Yes, I know that father has gone to meet him. She did not glance up from her baking. You don't sound very excited that our cousin Jacob has traveled all the way from Canaan. Leah wiped the perspiration away from her forehead with the back of her hand. Earlier, she had pulled her long brown hair into a thick braid that hung down her back and had covered her head with a scarf. Nervously, she fingered it. I don't like to meet strangers. They always stare at me because of my eyes. Men never notice my hands or my hair or anything nice about me. All they notice are my eyes. You remember, she had squinty eyes. She had weak eyes, the Bible says. So I figure she has to squint if her eyes are weak. But Leah, this man is our cousin. You must want to meet him. Why must I want to meet him? Leah asked uneasily. What does he look like? Handsome. He's tall with strong shoulders, as big and broad as father's, I'm sure. You should have seen the way he rolled the stone off the well. As I told you before, he's a real man, not just a shepherd boy to flirt with. Rachel giggled. Then she added knowingly, I'll bet he's come to Haran to get a wife. What makes you so sure? When I met him at the well, he kissed me. Leah's heart sank. How could she ever compete with Rachel? Lively, sparkling, lovely Rachel. Jacob had already kissed the younger sister. Rachel flitted over to the open gate to watch for their father and the kinsmen. Sunshine splashed across her dark hair, giving it auburn highlights. Leah touched her own light brown hair. Would Jacob notice that it was longer than Rachel's? She ran her hand down the side of her body. Would he see that her figure was more mature than her sister's? They're coming! Rachel's voice rose in excited anticipation. I can see father bringing him down the street. In alarm, Leah glanced from her sister to their room, to the storeroom. The storeroom was closer. She dashed for the doorway. You see, in these houses they had there, the rooms were around like this, with a door to each room, and then a courtyard in the middle, and then a wall over here. So the courtyard was enclosed from the street. Anyway, and she dashed for the doorway. With her heart pounding, she hid behind a pile of empty baskets. Footsteps sounded on the courtyard bricks. Cautiously, she peeked around the side of the baskets and out the doorway. Her father and Jacob walked slowly across the courtyard toward Laban's room. It struck Leah how much they looked alike. They could have been father and son instead of uncle and nephew. Equally tall, they had the same wide shoulders, but Jacob's body was slimmer than his uncle's older, more mature frame. The main difference was the color of their hair and beards. Laban's gray, Jacob's dark brown. Laban led the way to the house and entered his room. Leah could hear the deep rumble of her father's voice, and she knew he was offering the traditional words of hospitality. Welcome, blessed of the Lord. Rachel dashed into the storeroom. Did you see him, Leah? Did you see him? She stepped from behind her hiding place. Yes, I saw him. Isn't he good looking? Do you think he came to find a wife? How should I know if he's after a wife? At the hurt expression on her sister's face, Leah instantly regretted her brusque reply. "Why are you angry with me?" Rachel asked. "I'm sorry I sound angry. I'm not angry. I'm afraid. I mean, when Jacob sees me, I'm afraid he'll look the other way." So that's our introduction there to Jacob's arrival in Haran. Now, I used, incidentally, it took 3 years for me to write this book. I just kept rewriting and rewriting. I didn't write anything until I had did 6 months of research on, you know, like what the house looked like and all these things before, and customs of the land, you know, why they could have a substitute, you know, more than one wife and all those things before I started writing. But some things were easy, like I used the mountains here in Holden when I thought of the mountains where they migrated. See, they're semi-nomadic. Some of the time they live in tents and they migrate north to the mountains in the summer. So I just thought you might be interested in them. During summer pasture, she liked to get up early and watch the sun rise from behind the rocky crests of the mountains. Okay, picture that, huh? And there's another one about the mountains. She loves the mountains. Early one morning, 4 months later, Leah lifted the tent flap and blinked against the brightness of sunshine on frosty ground. She looked up at the northern mountains. A sprinkling of fresh snow covered their jagged tops. Okay, we were here 1 year in September, and we got up one morning, and a sprinkling of snow covered their jagged tops. So that was an easy bit of research. And that was a while ago, but I just remembered, you know, I remembered that when I was writing this, and I just put that in there thinking of Copper Mountain and Buckskin. So, now, she's of course, both girls, these two teenage girls, have fallen in love with Jacob. And, the father and Jacob, who are the same height, so they can look eye to eye, and they are two men who are, you know, one is as deceitful as the other, and one is as strong as the other, and they have bargained for Rachel, and he's to work 7 years, and and the girls know this, the father has told them, and so Rachel is betrothed and Leah is not. But we've got to, Laban has 7 years to find a husband for Leah. But in the meantime, Leah is hoping that maybe Jacob will fall in love with her too, and then he would ask for her, and then he could marry both of them, and that'd be okay. So
that happened very often at that time.
Some of them had, quite a few had two wives. Abraham had, he had Sarah, and then he had another wife. But Hagar was not his wife, she was the maid, but he had another wife too. And who was it? Samuel's father had several wives. So evidently it was permissible. And unusual, I guess, for them to be sisters, however. I have a Jewish friend that clues me into these things, and she said that's just not part of the, but it happened in this case. So evidently it was within the law, and they did have their laws. So anyway, she's hoping Jacob will fall in love with her. But here's a little scene. Her father called into the tent. "Leah, come quickly. They're out and living in their tents, you know." "What is it, father?" "A stray dog from the last village attacked a lamb and tore a gash in its leg." Leah grabbed the pouch of herbs in her part of the tent. Quickly she broke off a broad piece of fresh aloe. Taking the jar of yarrow salve, she dashed out of the tent. Her father held the lamb. Kneeling on the ground, she cleansed the wound with a gelatinous inner portion of the aloe. The lamb cried and kicked while she worked on its leg. Soon the bleeding stopped. Then Leah applied yarrow salve to the wound. "Let me hold you for a few minutes." She reached for the frightened lamb and gently tried to quiet its fears. The creature felt small and defenseless in her arms. The wool, soft and thick, was warm under her hands. And one of the reasons I wanted this scene in here, there were a couple reasons. One was to show her jealousy a little bit later here, but also to show that she wants so much to be married and have a baby. She's just as longing. She's past marrying age. Marrying age is 12 or 13 years, and she's already 17, and she doesn't have a husband, and she doesn't have any babies. And other girls her age have 3 or 4 children by now, but she doesn't have any babies. Little lamb," she sang, rocking back and forth on the ground. The lamb's struggles became weaker until at last it lay in her arms, blinking at the setting sun. "You're a baby in my arms, aren't you?" she crooned to it. "Are you hungry, little one? I can't feed you, but I'll take you to your mother. And I'll pray to Jacob's God that he will keep you safe. Only one God, it's hard to believe. Maybe Jacob will tell me more about it." She glanced up and saw Rachel walking toward the river with a water bag over her shoulder. Jacob strolled beside her. Leah watched them until the willows growing along the river hid them from view. With fierce longing, Leah hugged the lamb more tightly, and it struggled to escape her grasp. She let it limp away, and she sat alone. So can you feel for her? Now, she's decided, though, that she's going to try to get Jacob to love her. So she's going to make opportunities. So she weaves a robe for him, and she cooks his favorite foods, and then she tries to find times to talk to him. The following afternoon, a cool breeze blew down from the mountains. Leah was glad for the spring sunshine that warmed her back. She rounded a hill to where Jacob watched the grazing sheep. When he saw her, he called out in surprise. "What's happened? Is something wrong?" Hurrying to meet her, he stared toward the camp and held his slingshot in readiness. The sight of his tall, strong figure rushing toward her set her heart to pounding. Did he care what happened to her? Or was he only concerned over the safety of the camp? He stood near her. She glanced up into his deep-set brown eyes. Alone with him, she was suddenly shy and let her gaze drop to the grass at her feet. "Nothing is wrong. I was just walking this way." Her father would never approve of her searching for Jacob in the pasture. But now that she had dared to come, she would use the opportunity. She would ask the questions that filled her mind. "You look like something is bothering you," he prompted gently. Now you remember, Jacob was a gentleman. His brother Esau loved to hunt and all, but Jacob was a shepherd, and he was a gentleman. So he prompts her gently, "You look like something is bothering you," he prompted gently. Once again, Leah looked up at him. She swallowed nervously. "I have a question. You said that there's only one God. How do you know that the Lord can protect my father's household and also protect your father's household when they are so far away?" Jacob motioned to a flat outcropping of rock among the bunches of grass. "Sit down, Leah. I want to tell you how I know." Resting on the stone, Leah pulled her robe over her goatskin boots and hugged her knees. A light breeze ruffled his brown hair as he sat down on a stone opposite her. "My grandfather Abraham told my father, and my father Isaac told me. One day the Lord appeared to my grandfather, and the Lord said he would give all the land of Canaan and make a great nation of his descendants. The Lord established a covenant between himself and my grandfather." Jacob paused and stared down at the rocky soil. His voice took on a low, vibrant tone. And then the Lord revealed that this covenant was between the two of them and all of my grandfather's descendants from generation to generation, everlasting. He raised his head and his eyes glowed with excitement. Do you understand what that means? I already have a covenant with the Lord, and all of my descendants will have the covenant with the true God. Leah sat in stunned silence. Would a God make a covenant with one man, a covenant that would pass to all the man's descendants? She had never thought of the possibility. It was too personal. Gods were distant beings represented by clay and bronze figures. They helped some of the time, but when they became angry, they could harm. Jacob's intense enthusiasm held her spellbound. He seemed so sure. She began to catch something of his certainty. He shifted on his rock. Someday I'll return to the land of Canaan, the land that my sons will possess. You should see it, the rolling hills, the pasture land, the sea. He reached down among the grass at his feet and picked a small wild poppy that nestled there and handed the blossom to Leah. The spring flowers are beautiful in Canaan, he said. The poppy lay like a tiny red cup in her hand. She looked from it into his face. With effort, she drew her gaze back to the blossom. Thank you, she murmured, realizing suddenly in her whole being that she wanted to say, I love you, Jacob. But of course she doesn't. She's not betrothed to him. Rachel is. Now, the 7 years have passed. And time has come, Laban feels. There is no point in having the younger daughter married sooner than the older. I mean, it would be very embarrassing to the father to have his older daughter not married. This would be an insult to him if the younger daughter was married first. Just cannot happen. Also, Jacob is a very skilled shepherd. He knows a lot about taking care of sheep. He is Laban's best shepherd. There are others, but Jacob is the very best one. So why not keep this shepherd here another 7 years? After all, Laban could solve his two problems in one solution. He could keep the shepherd there another 7 years, and he could find a husband for Leah. So he has made up his mind, and he's ready to tell Leah. Leah, her father strode into the courtyard. It surprised her that he had come home so early from the shearing. She got up from the loom and went to him. What's wrong, father? Nothing's wrong. Come with me. I want to talk to you. She followed him into his room. This was Jacob's room, too. As usual, she was aware of her father's household gods arrayed along the brick shelf that jutted from the wall. Folded sheepskins rested in a corner. Jacob's robe was thrown over a large basket. What is it you want, father? Sit down. I have something important to tell you. Leah positioned herself on a cushion. Clearing his throat, her father announced, "You're going to be married." She detected the authority in his voice, and her heart skipped. Married? Who will marry me? Somehow she had a hard time making any words come out. It's not important who is going to marry you. Aren't you going to thank your father for arranging your marriage? Yes, of course, father. I'm very grateful. Thank you, thank you. But who? All right, it's Jacob. Jacob? But Rachel. Never mind Rachel. His irritated words stabbed into her mind. You're older, you must marry first. I know I'm supposed to marry first, but what does Jacob say about this? She asked in a barely audible voice. He doesn't know, and you won't tell him. Then the realization of her father's scheme hit her. She knew about substitutions on wedding nights, and it had occurred to her that her father might plan such a thing for her. Deep inside, she knew that he never intended for Rachel to marry first. She had wondered how he would plan to save her from shame. Father, how will you arrange my marriage? She asked steadily. Now listen carefully, so you'll know what you're supposed to do. Her father also spoke matter-of-factly. After the feast on the first night of the wedding week, I'll take Jacob to the bridal chamber. Of course, you'll be wearing the traditional veil, so he won't see you, and you'll remain silent, as is proper for the bride, so he won't hear your voice. Leah stood up and faced her father. Jacob will be furious when he finds out. He doesn't want to marry me. He loves Rachel. Marriage isn't for love, Laban roared. A man takes a wife to carry his seed and produce sons for him. I'm sure I can earn his love with sons, but in the meantime he'll hate me. Tears filled her eyes. Now don't start weeping. Are you objecting to something I'm doing for your own good? Stop crying. This is the way it's going to be. Leah had never heard his voice so inflexible, even when he bargained over the price of his wool. I'm not objecting, Father, she answered. I just don't like the thought of him hating me. He won't hate you if you give him his sons. You're a woman, aren't you? It's your duty to produce sons. And I'm wondering if it's right to deceive a kinsman. For a woman, you think too much. Leave all this in my hands. I know what I'm doing. Laban stalked out of the room. Leah sank down onto the cushion again. Jacob's wife. The one place she longed to be was in his arms. She had long daydreamed of how she might become his wife. For years, she had pictured him saying to her father, I've learned to love Leah, and I want her for my wife. Of course, that hadn't happened. Are you objecting? Her father had asked. Was she? No, no, never. But I'm afraid, she thought, as she closed her eyes and began to sway silently back and forth. I want Jacob's love. Could he learn to love me if I give him sons? How wonderful it would be to hold my own babies in my arms, to nurse them at my breast, to love them, to watch them grow into men who would look like Jacob. Her father was right. The older daughter must marry first. Never had she disobeyed him. She mustn't rebel against his authority, nor against tradition, even if it meant she had to become part of a deceitful scheme against the man she loved. When she opened her eyes, the household gods gazed at her with blank expressions. They offered no help. She shivered. Quickly she ran out of the room into the courtyard where the sun warmed her upturned face. Lord, help me. I'm afraid, so afraid. Well, as you know, they deceived him, and then can imagine how angry Jacob was the next morning, and the Bible tells us what happened next. Laban said, it is, he says, why have you deceived me? You know, why have you given me the older daughter instead of the younger? And Laban said, it is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other one also in return for serving me another 7 years. Someone asked me this morning if Jacob had to wait 7 years then for Rachel, but the Bible doesn't say that. It says that after the week, Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to wife. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served Laban for another 7 years. So evidently, just after 1 week, he had two wives. And according to the Bible. So then getting along here toward the end. If you remember, then we had starting having sons. And each time Leah had a son, she said to herself, now my husband will love me. She has Reuben. And Reuben is this nice little boy who's always helping his mother. Remember, he brings the mandrakes to her when he's a little older. And I just became so fond of Reuben. He just was so nice and helpful. And then she, soon after Reuben, of course, she had Simeon. And then right soon as possible, she had Levi. You've got to have all these children in 7 years. I figured it out mathematically. One of them had to be premature because there were just an awful lot of them. And you've got to get seven. She had seven children in 7 years, and then there was some time when she didn't get pregnant. Well, she had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and then Judah. And this beautiful little baby, Judah, you know, is the ancestor of Jesus. And he's just, I just wanted to hug him all the time. He was so sweet and loving. And then she didn't get pregnant. Well, in the meantime, of course, Rachel wasn't pregnant at all. Poor Rachel. We have to feel sorry for Rachel. And Leah did feel sorry for her. She loves her sister. Leah's a loving woman. She loved her sister and her father and her children and her husband. Rachel gives her maid, Bilhah, to her husband. And the law says that if Bilhah has a baby, as soon as it's born, the midwife will put it on Rachel's knees and it will become her child. It is her son. So Bilhah has two, but then Leah's worried. You know, here's her husband not loving her, and Rachel's having children. So she gives her maid Zilpah to Jacob. And Zilpah has two sons. That makes that we've got eight now of these 12 sons that Jacob will eventually have. Well, so you've decided to give your maid to your husband. How are you going to tell your husband? Okay, let's find out. Leah wandered among the sheep, unsure where to find her husband. Some of the sheep were grazing up a sunny slope. They scattered as she headed for the top. A shepherd sat in the shade of a scrubby bush, playing a solitary game with some stones as he watched over the animals nearest him. Have you seen Master Jacob? I can see him from here. Remember, she doesn't see too well, so she has to have help. I can see him from here. He pointed across the field. Leah walked in the direction he indicated. How should she begin? Would he take Zilpah willingly? At last she saw her husband where he quietly watched the flock. She was able to approach quite close before he glanced up. You surprised me, he said. I have something important to discuss with you, she said, seating herself on a stone opposite him. She took a deep breath. Reuben is your firstborn son. Then we had Simeon and Levi and Judah. I know who my sons are. How would you have handled this? So then she answers, four sons are not enough. You women want more and more sons, he said in a low voice. If they don't come, you blame me. I'm not blaming you, but I plant the seed, he broke in. I do my part. It's the woman's job to carry the seed and produce the baby. Rachel claims it's my fault that she can't carry a child. And you can read that in Genesis there, that she blames him. I'm not blaming you, she repeated softly. But you want more sons too, don't you? Jacob gazed across the field. Of course I want more sons. It's only natural for a man to want many sons to carry on his traditions and to take care of him in his old age. Leah's voice trembled slightly. Take my maidservant Zilpah to have more sons. "Why can't you give them to me?" he demanded. "Why do I have to take Zilpah? I took Bilhah because Rachel can't hold any of the seed I planned. But you have. You've done it before. Why do I have to take Zilpah? I see no reason why you can't produce more sons for me." He paused before he added wistfully, "I've always depended upon you." "I don't know why I can't," she felt desperate. "I don't know why. It's just not happening. I can't see any way to have more sons unless I give Zilpah to you." "If that's the only way, all right, I'll take her," he grumbled. "Just leave me some peace and quiet." She started to return to the camp. "Wait," he called. She went back to him. Had he changed his mind already? He cleared his throat. "We must thank the Lord for the sons we have and ask his good fortune to stay with us." Taking her by the hand, he led her slightly away from the sheep. They stood side by side in the field and raised their faces toward the sky. Jewish people don't bow their heads to pray. They raise their heads. His hand around hers felt warm and strong. After a few moments of silence, he prayed, "Thank you, Lord, for the sons. You have given me Reuben, the firstborn, a fine young lad. For Simeon and Levi, healthy and full of energy. For Judah, a sturdy little lion's cub. Do not forsake us, Lord. Send us your good fortune." Then he was silent again, listening for any message the Lord might wish to send. A soft breeze blew across the land. It touched Leah's face like a caress. She heard the familiar sound of bleating sheep, felt the vibrations of their hooves on earth, smelled the oily aroma of warm sunshine on wool. "I love you, Jacob," filled her mind, edging out the prayer of thanksgiving for their sons. "Why can't I bring myself to tell you that I love you?" His voice broke the closeness of the moment. "I'll go to Zilpah tonight." And then poor Leah goes through some times of jealousy, of course, and she has brought it upon herself. But they're all such real people. They're all so they aren't just figures that we read about, but they were very real people with all the real feelings that we have too. Well, then this dear little boy Reuben brings the mandrakes to his mother. The reason he brought the mandrakes was he heard his mother say that she wished she were pregnant, and mandrakes are supposed to be a fertility drug. So he brought the plants, and if you eat the fruit, you might become pregnant, but if you want a male child, you take the bark off the roots and you soak it in wine, and you drink a little bit of this wine every day, and then if you conceive, it will be a male child. So he has brought the mandrakes to his mother. Well, as soon as Rachel sees these mandrakes, as you remember from the Bible, she says, "Oh, Leah, give me some of those mandrakes, and you'll give me the mandrakes," because she hadn't had any babies at all, except through her maid. Oh, poor Rachel. And so Leah gets kind of angry, and she says, you've taken my, is it enough that you've taken my husband? Now you want my, you don't allow me any time with my husband, and now you want my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel, the Bible tells us, said, well, if you give me the mandrakes, you can have Jacob tonight. So, okay, they bargain, and they agree on this. Okay, now, who's going to tell Jacob? How's Jacob going to find out about this? Well, it's up to Leah. Here we go again. The sun was setting over the wheat field. There are some farmers with a wheat field. That's where Reuben found these mandrakes, by the edge of the wheat field. Anyway, The sun was setting over the wheat field, giving it a golden glow. The stalks waved in the evening breeze. When she neared Jacob, and here they have the pasture is right next to the wheat field, and there are no fences in those days, so you know you've got some problems with those like Cain and Abel. You've got those that do one kind of job and one another, and it's still going on. Anyway, that's not important to what I'm, but I just want to explain why the wheat fields were there. But he's out there with the sheep. When she neared Jacob, Leah noticed that his shoulders sagged. He was tired after the many hours of watching her father's flocks. The extra strain of wheat harvest time and the animosity of the farmers took their toll every year. "Do you wish to rest a few minutes?" she asked. He sat down and stretched out his legs. "I have a sturdy tent with soft sheepskins," she added. Jacob glanced at her. "Why are you telling me this?" "My tent is a good place to rest after a day in the fields." He looked at her doubtfully. "Are you so bold that you're asking me to spend the night with you? You must come into my tent because I've hired you with Reuben's mandrakes." "What do you mean you've hired me with Reuben's mandrakes?" "Reuben brought some mandrake plants to me. Rachel and I made a bargain. For her, the mandrake plants. For me, a night with you." "You mean that you and Rachel bargained for me?" His beard jutted out in front of him as he threw back his head and shook with laughter. "Women," he exclaimed. "I'm too tired to understand you women." Rising, he headed toward the camp. Leah followed, powerfully aware of his broad back, his strong shoulders, the proud lift of his head. She smiled. The time of the moon was right. Perhaps this very night, Jacob would plant new seed for her next child. And then we know that she did have two more sons, and finally a little daughter, a little Dinah. She finally had a daughter. And they're going off to Canaan at last. He's worked out his 14 years, and then he worked another 6 years for wages, and his wages were all the spotted and striped sheep and goats and the black sheep. And so he has become a wealthy man. He has camels and many, many camels and sheep, goats, and donkeys and cattle. He's become a wealthy man. So it's time to leave for Canaan. Well, he's going to go off without his father-in-law knowing it. And but then Leah's kind of worried about this trip. After they leave Haran, well, and now to leave Haran, no longer to visit in her father's house, after all, she loves her father too, no longer to feel the security of having him near or waiting for them when they return from pasture. After they left Haran, what dangers lay ahead for her children? How would they safely cross the Euphrates River? And you know, that river was wide and deep. It took me several weeks to figure out how we're going to get all those camels across that river. And but we finally got them across, and I found out how many camels you can put on a boat. And we got them all safely across eventually. She had never stepped into a boat. Perhaps Levi was right. It might sink with a load of heavy camels. She couldn't swim. The children might fall into the river, and she knew it of no way to save them from drowning. If they did safely pass the river, what then? First the desert, where wolves and jackals roamed the hills and valleys. They followed the flocks, seizing lambs and kid goats and sometimes a small child. Strange tribes lived in Canaan. She had heard harrowing tales of robbers. Bands of them swooped down on caravans, killing the men and capturing the women and children to sell as slaves. And if that wasn't enough, Jacob had told her he expected trouble from his brother Esau. 20 years ago, Esau had threatened to kill him. So she is a worried mother, as you can imagine. Wouldn't you be? And so they're... Well, time is just about up. I'll read you one little short one here. He put his wife and his children on camels, and away they went off to Canaan. Wait a minute. Missed one here, the one I wanted to read to you. Here. It's this one. She had agreed to go to Canaan, and she's sorry to miss her father. It was too late to thank her father. She couldn't trust her father completely anyway. If he wished, he could claim her and Rachel and all their children as his property, the law said that, since they were their father's possessions. They must leave without his knowledge. She dropped her hands away from her face and realized they were wet with tears. If only she didn't feel so useless. Who needed an aging, weak-eyed woman? She felt a little arm around her neck and a face pressed against her wet one, Dinah's cheek against hers. Leah had provided many sons for Jacob. Dinah was for her. So I'll leave you there. And if you have any questions, sit here. If some of you might need to leave, feel free to leave. And if you want to stay and ask questions, well, I'll do the best I can.
You have I'd like to know about these wonderful processionals. And I stumbled onto one. Wangerin is sort of a new author, I think. Walter Wangerin.
Yes.
Who writes very fanciful tales. But he was here in Holden and gave this lecture on the epic and the story of Jacob. And he does it very dramatically in telling how Jacob got his comeuppance.
Yes.
Laban, because he having cheated his own brother, and so on. So it's a marvelous tape in the tape room that ties in to your story.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. So, and it's right down at the end of this hall, and you just go in there and put it on and put on your earphones, and you can listen to it. Yes, Walter Wangerin, you'll find it there under the W's. Mm-hmm. We were here when we. I didn't hear that one, but I heard some of his other stories. Fascinating storyteller.
Did Rachel ever have any children then?
Yes. she had Joseph. And of course, Joseph was his father's favorite child. And his brothers finally sold him to the Ishmaelites that were coming, and that's how to Egypt, and that's how sold him off as a slave. Now remember, it was dear Reuben, who this boy I like so much. Well, they were men then, of course. He said, "Don't kill the boy. Put him down in this well." And then he was going to come back later and get Joseph out. But in the meantime, the Ishmaelite caravan came along, and the brothers pulled him out and sold him as a slave, and that's how he got down into Egypt. And then, of course, she was pregnant again, and on their way down to Canaan, she delivered Benjamin, and she died there. So you can visit her grave in Israel, Rachel's well, and her grave there. We were there and visited her grave. And then we also visited Jacob and Leah's grave. Abraham, Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, and Leah and Rachel were all buried in a cave. And the cave that Abraham bought from the Hittite to bury Sarah. And we saw that cave. It was quite it was very touching to me to stand there and see it.
Did the mandrakes work for Rachel?
Evidently, she
that was
she had
Joseph there?
She had well, she it was a little while before she had Joseph though, because in the meantime Leah had two more sons, and then Rachel had Joseph. Joseph and Dinah are more or less the same age. So they were only about 6 years old when they left for Canaan, those two. And we had to get all those others born. It was difficult.
See, does she know what it was for her?
And I just had to have those two maids pregnant at the same time because we just couldn't fit it in otherwise. I never thought of that before. Lots of things.
You have some other books that you've written?
Oh, yes. I have that, The Little Adventures in Solitude, that they still have copies of that up there. It's a little 30-page booklet.
What was the other one?
Adventures in Solitude. She. Only takes about half an hour to read that one. And a lot of people told me that when they're reading Leah, they keep their Bible open right beside them so they can see, you know, if I was really authentic there. And I was really pleased because the first one that told me that was our son. And I was really pleased that he had his Bible open. And he says he's been reading his Old Testament a lot since he read Leah. Well, there's so many wonderful stories in the Old Testament and in the New Testament too, of course, but there are these, and if you keep reading them over and over and over again, you just keep seeing more things, new insights, just more things about what Abraham and that Hittite bargaining. How many of you have been to Mexico and have bargained, or some country where you bargain? And it was just fascinating the way Abraham and that Hittite bargained, because it's in Genesis chapter 23, and the Hittite says, Abraham says, you know, sell me this piece of land so I can bury my wife. And Hittite says, I'll give it to you. He doesn't. Mean he's going to give it to him, and they go back and forth there for a while, please give me this land and so on, and finally the Hittite says, well, what are 400 shekels to me, and then it says, and Abraham agreed, and he paid him the 400 shekels, that's the way they bargained, and so we have a lot of bargaining here. We have Laban and Jacob bargaining for Rachel, and then Leah. I had Leah and Rachel bargain for Jacob there. But reading it in the Bible, it's a delightful bit of humor where she goes out and says, "I have," that's right in the Bible there. I have hired you with Reuben's mandrakes. I just think that's delightful. I have hired you with Reuben's mandrakes. So there's some really delightful places in the Bible, aren't there?
Yes. I just wanted to make a comment. I manage the bookstore here, and we're all out of Leo love story, but they're supposed to be in. And coming in, and hopefully it'd be this week. But what I thought we could do is, if you're interested in, and well, hopefully they'll be here while you're here, but if they don't, just stop in the bookstore. We can make arrangements where if you put your name and address down, we can see that you get a copy. So I just wanted to let you know that. Because I'm really sorry about
the distributed, are the books? Would they be available in Washington?
They're available in Seventh-day Adventist bookstores. Because the Seventh-day, this wonderful book company, Review and Herald, published them. And so if you have a Seventh-day Adventist bookstore in your town, or you can order them from Holden Bookstore, or have your Christian bookstore will order them from the Seventh-day Adventist. But you have to know the name. But it should be easy to order them right from. Because they were willing. I tried Augsburg and they didn't want it. I tried Concordia and they didn't want it. So although after it, I had signed the contract with Review and Herald, Concordia phoned and said, have you signed the contract? We've decided we want it after all.
Aww.
Would have been nice to go with Concordia.
Sure.
I would have loved it. But it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
And Review and Herald does a beautiful job. I mean, look what they did for the cover.
Have you plans to write other books about particular...
Oh, yes.
You already have.
I realize it took me 3 years to write this. I'm struggling along with Moses' wife,
mm-hmm.
Zipporah.
Mm-hmm.
And most people say, I didn't know Moses had a wife. And I've become extremely fond of Zipporah, this Midianite girl. And she was a shepherdess. She and her six sisters. She had six sisters. And... they're taking their flock, their father's flock, to the well to water it, and some rival shepherds come and chase the girls away and threaten them. But here's Moses, has just arrived in Midian from Egypt, and he
on his
rides
white horse.
And what?
On his white horse.
And he chases the shepherds away, and he waters their flock for them. And they leave him down there at the well, and they go to their father's tent, and their father, Jethro, says, how come you got here so early today? And they said, well, they think he's Egyptian, you see, because he's dressed like an Egyptian, and Egyptian shaved, whereas these Midianites had beards, and here he is, you know, probably with just a stubble. And and they say, well, this Egyptian, some shepherds came and to chase us away, and this Egyptian protected us, and then he helped us water a flock. And Jethro says, and you left the man down at the well? Go down there and get him so that he can break bread with me. So these girls have to go back and get this man and bring him back up there. And he stays with the Midianites, and then Jethro gives him his oldest daughter in marriage. I don't know how much she had to say about it, but she loves him. Mine are all love stories. and then, of course, eventually, Moses sees a burning bush, and God speaks to him and tells him to go back to Egypt, and it says he puts his wife and sons on his two sons, and he puts them on a donkey, and off they go to Egypt. So, but there's some very dramatic parts in that. That on the way to Egypt, Moses becomes deathly ill, and Zipporah saves his life.